All right, everybody, welcome back to the Boldcast 27. Here with me today is Donk, who's been on the Boldcast before. Oz, he unfortunately is really busy right now with the game developments, so it's good for him. He's always going to be coming back when he has time for it. But for now, the regular co-host is going to be Donk. Hey, Donk, how's it going?
Hello. Welcome, everyone. I'm really glad to be here.
Awesome, man. So, yeah, I know you've been a listener for a while, and you're also a YouTuber. We've known each other for about, you know, probably a little bit getting up to a year now, right? So we're on each other's Discords, and I've gotten to know you over the past months, and I'm super happy to have you on, and I was happy when you said you would be willing to do it. So welcome.
Thank you very much. I'm obviously a little bit nervous, but I'm sure that I'll calm down once the season goes on. But yeah, really, really looking forward to what we get into on this podcast.
All right, so we have a bunch of stuff to talk about today. Bullet points, we're going to be going through the multiplayer rating system. We're also going to be covering some freezes and stutters and problems with the game that people or some users are having just with performance, and maybe come up with some, you know, troubleshoot some fixes that people could implement today that could improve their gaming experience. We also have something really cool in the game to discuss. Apparently there's some type of Easter egg at Cleveland. You may or may not have heard about it, so we're going to go over that. And then finally, we're going to recap with some of our races that we've done recently. So let's get started. Donk, have you done any multiplayer since the MPRS has come out?
I have done an absolute ton of multiplayer. It's pretty much what I focus on exclusively. And it's been pretty fun. With all the new content we've been getting, it's been super fun to race with my community.
Yeah, immediately there was a bump in population. And I think that's one of the reasons why a rating system is really, really important. It gets people invested in their progress. But inevitably, you know, it's been 2 months down the line now. So all of the, you know, the details of that rating system are subject for interpretation of what people think a multiplayer rating system should or could be. So, you know, now we're hearing feedback about it. Okay, what is it? What does it do? What doesn't do? So I think as a baseline, I know we've discussed this before, but as it came out, it is exactly like the legacy quote unquote system, which is the Project Cars 2. That means it gauges players based on their competition score and then also safety rating. So they're completely bifurcated. The competition score is interesting. It's just a number that you can accumulate points as you achieve success on track. It evaluates your performance versus other players. You could win a race and lose points with this system. That's an important thing to point out. And I think it came to a shock to a lot of the, you know, faster guys out there. Your competition score is based on where you finish in a race in comparison and relative to the competition scores of your opponents. So if you have a bad race against opponents that are, you know, really low score compared to yours, you're going to get hammered with points, you know, lose a lot of points. Whereas if you race against a lot of strong guys and you have a lower score and you win, you're going to get a ton. So that's one of the things that's a little bit interesting about this system. Do you know anything about the safety rating system, Donk? How it works?
I do not know a great deal about it, but I just know it's very similar to the Project Cars system that they have in Project Cars 2.
Yeah.
Which is depicted with the letters. So it goes from U, F, E, D, C, B, A, all the way up to S, and S being the top rank you can achieve.
Yeah, S is what you want on the screen. That'll let people know that you're a relatively consistent driver. But there are also some cracks with this too. So what it is not, Doc, as I understand it, is not a live steward. Okay. The game is not trying to determine fault on an individual driver corner by corner basis. So if you get smashed from behind at turn one at Monza, like everybody does, you're all going to take a hit. But you accumulate points by being consistent. So lap after lap, corner by corner, you're accumulating points. You get a bonus for being close to other cars. So clean overtakes matter. But whenever you have an off, you go off on the grass, you hit an object, I think maybe even this, you know, the brake meter boards, you spin, or you hit other cars, they're going to deduct points from you. There's actually even some rumors, and this may be indeed, like I've seen this too, but it's really hard to really nail down. But apparently, if you finish a race, Donk, and you drive around the track, if you drive too fast, you get penalties in safety. I'm not even exactly sure what the proper speed is now driving around the track. If you do that whole like burnout ram session that people like to do after the race, you're gonna get all take safety rating hits. So what I've been doing is after the
Oh, I
race is
didn't know
over,
that.
I've been just dry putting in a third and just trying to, go around at a moderate speed and, and try to get out into the lobby as quickly as possible.
Yeah, we have a habit, or we used to have a habit with our group that when we'd finish a race, we'd all ram each other at the very end. But now the rating's in, we've all stopped doing that now. But I didn't know that there was a speed limit as well to the manual cooldown
I
there.
didn't know that either, and I don't remember that being there in Project Cars 2, but apparently there is. There's a really good report on the forums about how the safety rating works by someone that kind of mined the data. So if you're interested, go to the forums. But yeah, so it does not gauge fault. It's only works with a group of statistics. So there the system is basically looking at your past performances and giving you a score and basing that score over your past performances. So what that means is if you do 100 races, the information is going to be more reliable than just one-off race. So everybody's going to have a bad race, right? Everyone's going to get hit when it's not their fault. But if you're getting hit when you think it's not your fault, in half of your races, and someone else is getting hit, legitimately, that's not their fault, like one out of every 10, you kind of start getting the picture that, there's maybe something that you can do as a driver to maybe avoid possible risky scenarios. Do you actually think about that when you're racing in a multiplayer? When you see stuff happening on track in front of you, or you look in the rear view and stuff is happening, does that alter how you drive at all?
Yes, I mean, I do that anyway, even without the rating system. I'd be conscious of who's behind me, and I always will slow down if I see a crash in front of me. Whereas, obviously, some drivers will try and speed on through because they're desperate to get in front. But I always take into consideration that if I do try and drive through it, there's a good chance I'll cause an even bigger crash.
Right.
And I've also dodged people in my rear view mirror that have been flying down to try and dive by me. So yeah, I'm very conscious of my surroundings and trying to keep it clean and a bit safe.
Yeah, and that's one of the intangible things that the rating system captures really well. So, that little intangible of a driver being able to interpret what's going on around them and handle it in the best way possible. A couple of things that I like to do is like when you start the race. Well, first off, I should say this: it's always safer to be in the front than it is in the mid pack. That's for sure. Mid pack
Front or
is,
front or last? Front or last?
yeah, front or last. If you're in the middle, man, it's
Don't go in the middle.
someone's gonna br be breaking short and someone's gonna be breaking late, and you're gonna be the turkey and cheese in the middle. So, yeah, so try to do your best and perform well in qualifying. Obviously, if you qualify last, your competition score might take a hit because just getting through cars takes time and the leaders just scamper away. But yeah, so the goal is to, obviously get better. But to get, even if you're in the mid pack, to try to stay as safe as possible. And one of the things that I like to do is I like to take an aggressive inside line if I'm on the inside line, Donk, almost to the wall or to the line. Almost to the grass. You give the person behind you a clear indication that there's no place to go on the inside. Because usually in multiplayer racing, it's the guys sitting the outside that get taken out the most, right? It's always the guys on the inside that are just bowling pin everybody at T1. So if you shut the door early, they have less. They get the indication there's less likelihood that they'll try to shoot down the inside of you, but it still happens. Like I've always been shocked. I'll be taking inside line and someone's got like one wheel on the track trying to get around me on the inside, and I'm just like, there's nowhere here, hit the brakes. And it usually causes a problem after that. But the other thing is, if I'm on the outside line, I like to stay a little bit more patient and wide. That's outside line is really more dangerous than the inside line.
Well, that's what I think this ranking system is going to teach people. Some it's going to teach about racecraft, about where you want to position your car to be safe and the way where you want to position your car to overtake and all be defensive.
Yeah.
And also, one of the best way to actually earn rating, as far as I can tell from what I've read and watched, is to drive around, and it's not necessarily overtaking people, but it's staying close to someone but not hitting them. I hear that is one of the best ways to actually gain rating and get up your strength score. The strength score is the numbers next to the letter, which can go from all the way up to 5,000.
You start no at one 50, will ever get there. It's impossible.
5,000.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I was watching Yorkie. And he raced project cars all the time in events, and he only got to about 4,000. So I think 5,000 might be a bit unachievable, but it's good that it goes up that high. So, and it's also a good indication of how strong someone is or how clean someone is in a lobby.
It really depends. You can get the score high if you're like the top driver. You can get your score high, but it massively depends on your competition. So if you're...
Yes, because there's a difference, isn't there? There's like a 400 points above your position or 400 points below. I mean, sorry, your strength is where your gain points. But anything past that, I believe, I could be wrong, I believe anything past that, you don't really get any ranking score. I might be reading that wrong.
Right. No, you're exactly right. So like if every race that you're in, everyone's the same competition scores, you full grid 20 cars, you know, your score 1600. If everyone else is 1600 and you win, you're going to get a massive amount of points. And then the next race, same thing. You know, you're at 1650 and everyone else is at 1650. You're going to get the same massive amount of points. But if you're at, say, 1700-1800 and everybody else in the lobby is at 1400-1500 and you come in second, you might take a whopper of a loss. Come in second and lose points. You know, I think so. That's one thing I think might be an area of improvement, giving guys a little bit of a point bonus for podiums. I think that's important too. So really, it depends on the lobbies that you're in. And I remember in my Project Cars 2 days, there'd be really, really fast guys creating lobbies and going through the qualifying. And if nobody showed up with a high enough competition score, they dropped out of the race. Because there's literally no point. Like, so obviously they were stacking, they're trying to stack their competition score. But if they had nobody in a certain, then they probably figured this out. If they had nobody in a certain with a certain high enough competition score, everything, like, there's no way for them to win points. If anything, if they come in second or, you know, spin out or someone crashes them out, they lose a massive amount of points. So that is a thing. The only cure, and this is unfortunate, is popularity, population size. So I don't ever think Project Cars ever got to that point where it was popular enough to be really take advantage of the full breadth and scope of the way the rating system is contemplated. Certainly AMS2 can't right now. Really, the lobbies are the lobbies you have. There's not like 5 or 6 different GT3 full lobbies of all different various skill minimums, right? Until that point, this rating system, you won't really see the breadth and scope of the rating system.
Well, that's the hope, isn't it? That's the hope from Reese. But hopefully they might in the future, I'm not going to say a date or even speculate, but sometime in the future they're going to introduce their own servers that run official races where they do cater for different safety ratings and strengths of field.
Yeah, and that's an exciting bit of news. I think that sort of takes it beyond Project Cars 2 and gets it closer to what we would consider a more modern type of multiplayer rating system with clear delineated levels of progress. And that's important for the racers, but still, even in that system, you know, there's going to be 2 guys on with 1800 plus, 10 guys on with 1700, 50 guys on with, you know, 1500, and 200 guys on with 14 to 1500. You know what I mean? So it's, you know, you're until that population gets up, you know, you're not going to be able to see the immediate effects, but at least you'd have a higher chance of having some really good racing. Like, so if they have 2 GT3 servers going, one with, you know, 1500 plus and one, you know, 1500 below, that's at least something to build upon.
That would be awesome. Yeah. That would be awesome, yes.
Now it depends on whether or not the guys that are 1500 plus want to go into the, like, is it going to be a forced thing? Like, if you're 1500, do you automatically get into the 1500 lobby, or, you know, are you disqualified from the, you know, 1500 below? You know what I mean? So there's, you know, or are they free to go into the lower lobbies and crush?
Yeah. Oh, they should be allowed to go into lower lobbies, I think, because if people actually do beat them, then the people who beat them, who are a lower rank, will get a massive boost in their rating.
So I think there's just going to be this sort of like a porpoise effect of people going up and down over 1500 yeah. or whatever. If that turns out the way it is, we'll see what they have in store. But we have to also keep in mind this whole thing is just a beta phase. So I'm sure they're learning a lot of things about the rating system, and they're going to be implementing, you know, adjustments as they see fit. Another point to the game-based, server-based races is that it may introduce a little bit more stability in the network as opposed to being, I think, peer-to-peer now, right? So there's a lot of that's dependent on the host, on all the players in the lobby, and it goes through the server as opposed to if it was just server-based. You know, it may be a little bit more clean, if that makes sense, network-wise. And that might help with some of the problems people have lately, which we're going to get into. But for now...
One more thing about the safety rating. Just a quick point out that it does count in practice and in qualifying. So
right.
Just be careful in those sessions.
Yes. So smashing Wreckfest during practice, it's not good.
Yes.
All right, that's a good point, and I think that wraps that up. But let's segue into the next phase. We discussed networking and how a server-based system might help people with their networking with the game and the net code and their connectivity issues. There has been some recent reports that a certain percentage of a player base are experiencing regular freezes and stutters while driving in the game now. And I don't think it's necessarily related to multiplayer. It also has been popping up in single player as well. Have you heard about any freezes or stutters or experienced any of them on your own?
I've fortunately not had too much issues with this, although as I do race online quite a lot, I have had people in the general chat or in voice chat complaining about freezes and stutters and stuff. We had a race around Ibarra last weekend where people were getting quite bad stutters and stuff, but for me, it's not been too bad, so I don't really have a solution.
Yeah, well, the first level of analysis is the user's own computer. I mean, is the computer strong enough to handle the game and the graphics settings that they have? You're going to get the regular amount of stutters and freezes and frame rate drops, but this is more specific because I think there was something that happened at 1.3 that changed something, and now people that didn't have those issues with the same settings are starting to have like major issues. And I'm talking, I've seen videos of people having like 5 second freezes in a multiplayer scenario and then waking up and they're in the wall, and all of the points deductions galore that you can think of under those circumstances. And then other people, it's more of like a stutter that occurs occasionally, and it doesn't seem to happen on the same parts of the track. So it's not like a track object or a distance rendering issue. So there's something going on here. I've tried to put together a list of possible solutions. And this is stuff that I've learned from friends and acquaintances that have experienced the issue. It may or may not solve the problem. First thing is, make sure your internet's clear. You're not streaming Netflix on the side. The second thing is, you turn off your UDP. Doc, you use UDP for things like crew chief, right?
No, you don't have to use UDP. You did, but you don't. I think it outputs the game telemetry to things like SimHub. If you're aware of SimHub. But it doesn't. But it's okay for crew chief. So I have to do a correction there. That is my fault. That's what I told you. So my bad.
Okay, so point being, UDP may impact your performance. Another thing I've learned recently is any background applications that are running on your computer that are maybe not even open, like in a window, but if you go to your task manager and you have like a ton of like Google going on, or you know, antivirus security software, anything that's going on in the background is bleeding resources from your computer. Microsoft has a telemetry apparently that is always running.
Yeah, I didn't know about this. I didn't know about this one. What is Microsoft telemetry?
I'm not 100% sure. I'm sure someone out there that's inclined can Google it, but Microsoft is monitoring. It's part of the operating system, I guess, that constantly monitors what's going on on your computer. That is apparently, you can enable it and disable it. Any game bars or anything like that, anything inconsequential to the game, you're trying to save resources. And I've gone through this process because I'm a VR player and I didn't have a strong computer a little while ago. So trying to get that 5% of performance out of your computer matters, especially in VR. So, you know, I've been through this process, but yeah, anything you can do. I've also recently heard that this could be memory related, just your RAM. So it appears that, and from what I've seen and from my experience, I have a lot of RAM at, you know, like 3,200 megahertz. So, and I have not experienced any stutters, crashes, or freezes. So I've crashed, but not freeze.
Interesting.
But, you know, there's some people saying, you know, they have 1,900 megahertz of RAM and 16 gigabytes of it or less, and they are having some issues. So there might be like I'm not a tech guy, but I'm going to use a term that I don't even know what it means, but a cache. Could be a cache issue, apparently.
Yes, I've got no money either.
All right, so let's move on to the last segment or last couple segments here, Donk. Now, you found something that has been it was pretty cool, and some other YouTubers have found it as well. But tell us about this Easter egg that has been revealed at Cleveland.
Oh, this Easter egg, right? It was first discovered by Charles Robillard, or I don't know if I'm pronouncing that correctly. I'm sorry, Charles, if
Robillard.
I'm not. Robillard or Robillard, one of those, and then it was later also discovered by Coyote Racing. It's at the Cleveland track, and there's a tunnel under the track which leads out into the sea offshore, and it takes you all the way to a building. I'm not sure what the building does, but it doesn't really matter because it's not consequential anyway. It leads you to a building, and in the building you will find a note giving you details of what the tunnel actually was in real life, because it's actually a real life part of the track, I guess you'd want to call it. And it's a really interesting, funny little Easter egg. I don't want to say what's on the note because I don't want to spoil it for people, but if you watch Charles Robillard or Coyote Racing's video on it, you'll find out how to get to the location. And it's a pretty cool first ever discovered Easter egg in Automobilista 2, and it makes me wonder what else and what other tracks have also got Easter eggs.
Yeah, I mean, this was a complete surprise to everybody on both sides. You know, even internally, it was a surprise. So, I've learned more about it, obviously, since I've heard people talking about it. And I think it's just one of those little things that, you know, I think it was a cool addition. I know there's a lot of people out there that try to do these things in games, you know, try to find little Easter eggs and things like that. And to introduce that kind of, it's not racing related at all, but it sort of brings you into the game a little bit more if you know these kinds of things exist. I don't know. It's hard to describe.
Such a fun little surprise. I mean, no one expected it at all. I mean, anyone was really looking around going, oh, I wonder what Easter eggs are lying around.
Right.
So when it was revealed, everyone was like, wow, this is amazing. And the tunnel is really, really long. So if you want to get to the top speeds of any car, go into that tunnel and you'll reach the top speed, because it's like going on to the Autobahn in Germany. But yeah, it's a really cool little idea they've really put into the track. And I love it.
Yeah. Well, apparently, from what I've learned, it also has some, for the people out there that are like, oh, yeah, why are they, you know, putting these things in there when they could be doing other things? Apparently it has a practical purpose. It had a practical testing purpose for some reason that, you know, the track guys needed. So it was useful, I think, for lighting and things like that. So yeah, it has a real you know, practical purpose that can help develop future items. So that was interesting to learn too. Okay, so let's wrap this up. First, we're going to talk about your recent races, or a race I think you've had with the DTM. Let's talk about that a little bit.
Okay, so what you want to know, basically?
Oh, how the race went? How'd you like the car?
Oh, it was really fun. It was a really fun race. We raced at Hockenheim Historic. I think it was. Oh, what year was it now? 1988, I believe. Correct me if I'm wrong, still, please. But it was 1988 in the old DTM cars, and it was a really fun race. It's actually on my YouTube channel if you want to go across there and watch it. The only problem is, the track was quite bumpy, and I didn't take that into consideration when I chose the track and car combo. But of that aside, it was like an epic battle between BMW and Merck, you know, the old DTM sort of like that is those the two big titans and that sort of stuff.
Right.
And it was a really close race from finish to end. Absolutely, I don't want to spoil what happened, but it was a really, really brilliant race.
Were the cars competitive with each other?
Yeah, for the most part. If people had changed their gear ratios, then I was getting absolutely destroyed down the straights. But yeah, they were competitive. They were really well matched because I was the first place was in the BMW, and I was in the Merc, and we were literally nose to tail on the last lap. It was a really good race. So.
Oh, good. Yeah. So those cars are. I think I did an iteration for the Merc. I didn't do anything with the BMW yet. But it's sort of, I have to revisit it because one of the tough things about testing is you can't put the car through all the scenarios. And I know it sounds like, oh, well, you should test it at Hockenheim Historic. There's going to be another version of it probably coming out because I learn a lot from hearing these things. So when you say that people are saying it's too bumpy, you know, that's a consideration. So, yeah, I'll take a look at the car. If you see the gearing is a little off, I'll take a look at the car, in different ways than I usually do.
There's also a problem with, there's a concern about the braking as well, because people are saying that they have to brake like they're trying to brake like it's ABS, like the self manually doing ABS braking. I mean, I didn't have this issue, but I've got like a Fanatec, so I can sort of modulate strength of my brakes. People on maybe Logitech or Rustmaster were having quite a lot of trouble with the braking during the race. I just thought I'd bring it up seeing as we're talking about it.
Yeah, I think there's been some talk about braking recently too, and how difficult it is to find the, you know, the threshold, the limit of the tires sometimes with certain equipment. I know there's pedals out there that vibrate and things like that are super, super nice. But modulating the brakes in a braking zone is not an optimal way to brake. You know, you want to find that perfect spot right away, keep it consistent. If your brake marker's point is on point, then you enter the corner at the right speed and everything's perfect. But if you're constantly trying to find that, you know, coming in and out of peak grip, not only is the peak grip changing with the car, but, you know, you're changing the chassis dynamics of the car and the loads are shifting. So it kind of gets worse and worse. But
it's unsettling,
the fact that you didn't have as much of an issue as others with other equipment, you know, that's also telling as well. And it leads me to another point about the bumpiness in general. I think AMS2 has been hammered for being bumpy and, you know, for a long time. And you can obviously see the, you know, if you're in cockpit view, you can see the front of the car moving up and down. And then you can also feel it through the force feedback. And from a telemetry standpoint, the car, is behaving normally, but I don't know if there's some sort of exaggerated force feedback, or if the graphics on the screen are a little bit exaggerated, or maybe something that's people aren't used to. I'm certainly used to it. It doesn't bother the chassis moving down. Doesn't bother me. It makes the car feel alive. And you certainly know that race cars do. They're not, you know, they're not sleds, so they do move up and down. But yeah, those are all factors in this bumpiness feel. Like, so somebody could be going through a braking zone that's really bumpy, and their force feedback is really, you know, jammering through their wheel. The car might be, you know, handling it fine, but the player is going to feel like they're in, you know, in a rocket launch or something, you know, in a Saturn V rocket. So a lot of it may be just user based. So it's important to get all your settings I mean, I don't mean to dismiss anyone who has had this issue or has this issue, but make sure your settings are in line. If you still encounter problems, you know, talk to somebody about it. See if maybe there's other ways you can improve your settings. Get on the forums and, you know, do a write-up and talk about, you know, something you're experiencing. And people like me will look at it. So I've also had a recent race, and it was something I wanted to talk about too. I was at Modern Spielberg in the Puma GT5s. I don't know. That's not a very popular car, but man, it should be. People were talking about, have you ever driven the Puma GT5 recently?
Not recently, but I have enjoyed it in the past. It's definitely one of those cars that we tend to go back to quite often, but I've not, unfortunately, raced it in probably maybe a month and a half, but it's not because I don't like it or anything like that.
No, it's people were saying that it's equivalent to like a Miata series. It's relatively low power, momentum car. It's got four-wheel drive, so it has its own unique driving characteristics. It's a really soft platform, but I felt like the car was really, really controllable. A really good entry-level car to figure out car dynamics and how you can change how the car feels just by your wheel and throttle inputs. It was such a great race. I think it was one of my top three races of all time, I think, in memory.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I had I streamed it, and I'm going to post a video on it, or if I haven't already posted it by the time this podcast comes out. But yeah, side-by-side racing with a guy that got a tip my hat off to. His name was Red Mist, and we were fighting for second place, and we literally exchanged positions maybe half a dozen times. And during the course of those half a dozen times, you know, we were side by side through several corners at a time, overtaking at turn three, someone going down the inside and the under over undering, and all of the things that you would expect from a good race. It was just so much fun. So tip of the cap to Red Mist. I wanted to give you a shout out as well for just being a fantastic driver, being respectful of each other's spaces. I don't think we touched once, Donk. We didn't touch each other.
Yeah, I love those sort of races.
Yeah, and it was just like when I was on the inside braking, I made sure to hold the inside line and give room on the outside and vice versa. And it was just this is what racing can be. And that's it. It can be this way. And it was just a great feeling after the race to come through it, regardless of who finished ahead of each other. It was more important than who finished ahead of each other, actually. Obviously, we were both trying hard, but, you know, to get in second. But it was more important that we had that clean racing. But yeah, so that was my recent race. And that will pretty much wrap things up, Donk. You're a YouTuber. Anything on your channel that you're excited about that's coming up?
Yes, I've got VR coming up in early February. So if you want to learn more about VR and watch what I do with VR, then please go over to Donk. It's the gorilla face you'll see over on YouTube. Go and subscribe. Be much appreciated. Thank you very much.
Yeah, great. So I'm actually been working very hard with the development side of things with the game, as you know. And so my YouTube channel is sort of taking a little bit of a backseat. I'm still working on my Setup Shorts series. I actually have a video pretty much 75% done, but it's getting that last 25% done, you know, is sometimes the hardest part of YouTube production. So,
oh yeah.
I'm working on it, but you know, right now we have in constant development cycles, and there's so many cars that I want to like get my hands on to help people, you know, just and not have to rely on going to like my YouTube channel. It seems kind of like you know, damaging to my YouTube career to be actually, you know, helping the game so people don't need to go, you know, find setups or anything like that. But you know, I think it's overall better, and it's way more interesting. So more videos are coming. I am working on them. They're just going to be coming out at a little bit slower pace than usual. But we're definitely going to be doing some more Boltcast, Donk, probably within the next couple of weeks. Usually when new updates come out or new content comes out, we'll have something to talk about. But in the meantime, everyone out there, thanks for watching, and take care.